Hello, and welcome to Voices from the SBO Summit, brought to you by the National Insider Threat Task Force. My name is Dr. Whitney Fow. I am a Senior Behavioral Research Scientist with the Threat Lab and the Defense Personnel and Security Research Center. Today, Dr. Paul Lester and Dr. Pete Herms and I are continuing the conversation we started back in September during the Counter Insider Threat Social and Behavioral Sciences Summit. So, hi, Pete. Hi, Paul. How have you guys been since the summit?
I've been doing great. Thank you.
Quite well.
Fantastic. So I hope all of our listeners have watched the recording of your webcast, all which is available on sbsummit.com. But for those who have not, would you mind telling us a bit about yourself and the work that you're currently doing?
Hi, Whitney. Thanks to you and the Threat Lab team for inviting me and Pete to talk with you today. I'm Paul Lester, and I serve as associate professor at the Naval Postgraduate School in Monterey, California. Prior to joining NPS, I was the founder of the Research Facilitation Laboratory, which is a Department of Defense people analytics organization. And Whitney, that's where you and I worked together for a bit. And I served in the Army as a research psychologist and an infantry officer. About a year ago, Professor Eric Helzer and I, who wasn't able to join us today, but we presented at the 2021 SBS Insider Threat Summit and discussed the Department of Defense's approach to addressing extremism in the ranks shortly after what happened on January 6th. For my DOD listeners, you might recall that there was a training stand down that everybody had to go through. It happened a few months after January 6th. And our focus was specifically on using the Naval Postgraduate School as a case study or a microcosm, if you will, of how people responded to the training. The training was presented online via Zoom. And in the Naval Postgraduate School's case, our school administration decided to have a group of faculty experts talk about extremism in general. And what piqued our interest, because we didn't really set out to do a study. We originally were just participants in the training. We were required to go to it because of what happened on January 6th. And we're Department of Defense employees, so they said everybody needed to show up. So we did. But as the training started to unfold, there were anonymous comments posted in the margins, which that particular platform allows people to do. And those comments were largely as a response to what the presenters were saying. So participants were hearing what was being said and watching the discussion among learned scholars about what extremism really is. And the students, mainly students and staff and faculty, had a lot to say about it. And suffice it to say, the comments were really raw and at times pretty unprofessional. The administration was accused of promoting a left-wing agenda. There wasn't enough space given to criticizing Antifa and Black Lives Matter. People really were angry about this. And while you could argue that people were emboldened by their anonymity, we didn't expect to see that level of anger and cynicism and polarization that we ultimately saw. So Eric and I scraped the 254 anonymous comments and we started to analyze them. And ultimately what came out of that work was really a group of recommendations on how to and how not to frame this type of training in the future. Mainly, we need to remember that what many people would consider fringe beliefs are actually really components of some people's identities. They deeply value these positions. So the likelihood that you can train that out of people is probably really low. And there were some other findings that we talked about, but those were really the main points. And beyond what we presented at the summit, we haven't had an opportunity to push the work any farther than what we've done up till now. So that's really just kind of a recap of what we presented last year.
Thanks, Paul. I do hope you guys are able to pursue that a little bit more. I found it very, very interesting and probably generalizable. So, Pete, since you were not part of Paul's SBS Summit presentation in 2021, would you mind telling us a little bit about the work you're currently doing?
So thanks for having me. I'm currently the Maryland Houston Fellow for Cybersecurity and Data Analytics at the University of Alabama. I'm trained as a personality psychologist. My research involves assessing and personality leadership, workplace deviance, and well-being. I would say most people know me for my work on what are called dark personality traits. So we're thinking of things like narcissism, psychopathy, and Machiavellianism. And in that domain, primarily around issues of leadership. So what happens when your leaders have these characteristics, or what happens when your followers have these characteristics, and the implication, or both, and the implications of that for the workplace. And very recently, looking at also issues of, are we more dismissive, for instance, when men behave badly as opposed to women behaving badly, and sort of giving people discretion, one gender over the other, with their bad behavior. I've spent almost 15 years now working with Paul Hall in the U.S. Army. I've also worked with NASA and the Department of Labor on a lot of these issues, just looking at successful functioning in extreme environments and also issues of just trying to get chronically unemployed people back into the workforce. So broadly, personality assessment, but also interventions designed to try to take people who have derailed in some way and sort of get them back into normative standing in the workplace.
Super interesting, Pete. Thank you so much. So as you both prepare for your presentation for the 2022 SVS Summit, which focuses on cognitive immunity, let's talk a little bit about that topic. So cognitive immunity is a growing topic of interest in the insider threat world. Can you briefly describe what cognitive immunity is and why you think it is receiving such increased attention?
At least in our current context of what we're talking about here, cognitive immunity is an individual's ability to fight off extreme ideologies, misinformation, maybe morally bankrupt ideas, and resist recruitment into extreme organizations that espouse these ideologies. And it's gained some interest at this point because we have a pretty good sense at this point that simple training of the do's and don'ts of insider threat and anti-extremism just won't get the job done. So the old, if you see something, say something, that's helpful, but it's not enough because in many cases, especially with insider threats, and I'm not talking about physical violence, but I'm talking about other forms of insider threat. Once you've identified that there's a problem, in many cases, it's already too late. When I would give talks about this, I would tell people that when you see the FBI arrest somebody, an insider threat, and it's A1 above the fold in the Washington Post, chances are it's too late. The damage has probably already been done. They caught the person, but a lot of damage has been done at that point. But also, disinformation and radicalization techniques, they're becoming more advanced, and frankly, they're more subtle. So there's kind of this long game that has to be countered. And likewise, we also need to realize that our adversaries are taking the long view. We in the Department of Defense and the federal government in general, we need to take a similar view of countering it. So, kind of stating it differently, there's no quick fix here. Educating people and developing people to be cognitively immune to these challenges, it's going to take some time. So because people are under a fairly constant barrage of misinformation, they have to build an immunity to it rather than presenting some sort of rule-based behavioral approach, which is kind of how DOD treats and the federal government treats a lot of our training, such as government financing or contracting ethics. We give you a long list of things not to do and sometimes some things to do, but we're telling you what to do, not really how to think about things. So to summarize, the Department of Defense and the federal government, we need a set of validated interventions, training and development interventions, and it may prove out that cognitive immunity is the framework that will help us do just that. I really think that it has a lot of potential there.
Thanks, Paul. And we're kind of drawing on what you said about no quick fix and a series of interventions. Pete, I'll turn to you. How does cognitive immunity intersect with the personality research?
Being a personality psychologist, one nice thing about my training is that I can speak to almost any issue where there are humans involved, right? If people behave differently than one another, you can probably guess that there's some sort of aspect of personality going on there. So regardless of whether you're talking about how people drive or ethics or computer security and things like that, you've got something to say. And this is an area where personality plays all sorts of interesting roles here. When I'm talking about personality, I'm talking about motives and values, different types of abilities, cognitive, emotional, perceptual tendencies, and traits. And all of those domains are different and relevant to this subject in different ways. So if you think about what your motives are, what your values are, those really determine how people engage in sort of assortative social functions. So who do they want to spend time with? What are the values that they're attracted to? Who they're going to want to be around? And what are they most receptive to? So you want to figure out what people's values are. With abilities, you can think of cognitive abilities. Are they able to process stuff? Are they rational? Are they going to look at things in a logical way or an emotional way? When we're talking about emotional abilities, also, who's easy to really stir up? Who's easy to get that they've got a grudge that they're going to hold and let like latch on to? And who can let stuff go? Because I think you find with a lot of the extremist messaging, people are being presented with images and stories that can really resonate with specific target audiences if they perceive themselves as being like the victims in some way. Your perceptual tendencies can be really important in this domain, because if you think of something like paranoia or propensity to trust, that sort of can be a double-edged sword. I mean, on one hand, we're telling people, hey, you should be skeptical of these incoming messages and try to ignore them. On the other hand, a lot of the messaging that we find with issues of these sort of external hostile threats has to do with, you can't trust your boss, you can't trust institutions, you're being lied to, here's the secret information. And paranoid people can be more vulnerable to that. So it's a really sort of hard one to handle. Is like, do we want people to be more paranoid or less paranoid? So it's like, that's really interesting from a research point of view. In terms of research, though, where you'll find most scholars sort of sitting is in terms of studying traits. And traits are just sort of patterns of behaviors and thoughts and emotions. It's what you regularly do. And this is where we've actually got the most data at this point in time. So we know, for instance, like extroverts will spend more time on social media and they'll display themselves more on there. So they might be more likely to be exposed. We know that people who are high in openness to experience are going to go around and sample new ideas and things like that. So they might be more open to unorthodox ideas. Where I've done a lot of work is with, again, dark personality traits, where you've got characteristics that sort of push people in a counter-normative direction. So if you think of something like psychopathy, I mean, these are people who don't think through their behaviors before they do them. They're quite reckless and impulsive. They're aggressive. They don't believe in social norms, and they have little empathy for others. And so like, they're really often in the center of the problems that you're seeing here. And I'm not talking about people with like clinical disorders. I'm talking about people that just kind of, they're sort of halfway in that direction. So we want to look at these things and just basically sort of identify who are the people who might be most vulnerable, who are the people who could use interventions. And all of these domains of personality come into play when we're talking about cognitive immunity and the types of issues that we're facing. So it's really sort of a rich yet poorly understood area. There's not a lot of research. There's just a lot of expert opinions in this domain.
Thanks, Pete. I agree with you. It is very interesting, especially from a research perspective and considering things like tendencies and dark personality traits. It's fascinating. So, Paul, I'll turn to you. We know that cognitive immunity has potential to help the insider threat domain in terms of prevention and detection, but there's relatively little research on the topic. What do you think are some of the ways the federal government could make cognitive immunity more actionable in light of what we know about personality factors?
Yeah, sure. I'll respond. And then I think Pete has kind of a follow-up to what I'm going to say, because we come at this from a little bit of a different direction. But in the end, both points are valid and they kind of meet in the middle. So, you know, I think the first challenge facing this type of work is the need for our federal leaders to work with our elected officials and to educate them on why focusing on cognitive immunity and insider threat and extremism is a worthwhile endeavor. As I understand it, you know, we're talking, it's the end of July 2022, and I've read a few things where there's pressure from Congress to abandon extremism in the ranks training, which is understandable if that training is approached in kind of a haphazard way. And I will tell you that, and this is my opinion, just my opinion, but I do think that the way that it was approached after January 6th was a little bit haphazard. But I also think that abandoning this effort would ultimately be a huge mistake. So we can just do better. And I think that the behavioral sciences has a lot to offer in this space, and not to be too on the nose because I'm biased here, but the government should continue to fund research on this topic because I think it's really fertile ground. We need more theory development. We need more empirical research. But really importantly, I think that the research should weigh more towards heavily on the development of theory and targeted interventions that, once we develop it, they're rigorously tested for validity. In other words, we need to transition rapidly past the point of where we're admiring the problem of extremism in the ranks and insider threat, and instead start to actually test some pathways towards prevention. And specifically, I'm not talking about weak program evaluation that relies on what we call smile sheets, where they ask, hey, did you like this training? No, but I don't care if you like the training. Okay. But rather, what I care about is the eventual testing of training that uses randomized control trials with treatment groups, comparison groups, and a true control group, along with objective outcome measures. And what I mean by objective, at least as objective as we can reasonably make them. okay? Because these are all low base rate events. They're really challenging to measure that. And the big challenge in predicting low base rate events is that because they're rare, they are inherently incredibly difficult to predict. But that said, if we can't show outcomes of the training that people actually learn what we wanted them to learn and that they're actually able to apply it and that they're changing their ways of thinking about this, then perhaps we should continue to develop and test it before requiring everyone in the government to sit through the training, okay? Because, you know, I've been part of programs that didn't have all of the validation that was necessarily required, and it can be really, really challenging. All of this requires a few things. First, we need patience. High quality science usually can't be rushed. Second, we need funding. Developing and testing these types of interventions the right way. It can be expensive. It doesn't have to be, but it can be expensive to do it right. And third, we need commitment from leaders to see this through the right way, which ties back to my first point about high quality science. You know, there's an old saying that the enemy of good is perfect, but another enemy of good is a shoddy product that's rushed to the consumer and either has no benefit or causes harm. To borrow the medical term, an iatrogenic effect, something that you think it's going to benefit somebody, but it actually makes them worse, is a real concern here. So we need to be careful and we need to have good testing and evaluation. Now, Pete, I'll go ahead and let you follow up to that.
I would totally agree on that. And I mean, I guess what I'm adding to that is, you know, just again, this personality perspective that the federal government already collects a lot of this data on incoming employees and things like that. So it has information that it could use. The question is whether it's actually being used for issues of selection, job placement, things like that. But with regards to the training, my other point would sort of be is not everyone is always receptive to the same types of training. So you can use that information to figure out more targeted assessments of where you're going to move the dial. And I guess also that you shouldn't lose hope here. So when I talk about personality, a lot of people think personality is immutable. You know, it's this relatively stable thing that maintains through your life. But we know it can change. We know it changes in response to experiences and expectations. It's valuable as a starting point. But when we think of our interventions, what can we do to, for instance, develop trust and things like that? And I think if we do think of it as a skills assessment, you might find, or a skills assessment and development, you might find a lot more sort of benefit to training interventions at that point.
Thank you both. There's a lot to unpack there. I suspect our listeners will be rewinding at this point a little bit. So I just want to thank everyone for listening. A big thank you to our speakers, Dr. Paul Lester and Dr. Pete Harms. Don't miss out on their 2022 SBS Summit presentation. So registration is actually now open at sbssummit.com. And you can also keep up to date on our new products from the Threat Lab with our distribution list. It's dodhra.threatlab@mail.mil. Pete, Paul, thank you guys so much.
Thank you so much for having us.